सद्गमया तमसोमा ज्योतिर्गमया मृत्योर्मा लीड अस फ्रॉम द अनरियल टू द रियल लीड अस फ्रॉम डार्कनेस अन टू लाइट लीड अस फ्रॉम डेथ टू इमोर्टलिटी. Let us sit quietly for a few minutes and try to meditate on the Supreme Spirit in any way we please. Om Sthapakaya cha Dharmasya Sarva Dharma Swarupini Avatara Varishthaya Ramakrishnaya Te Namaha. I bow down to Sri Ramakrishna who established religion, embodying in himself the reality of all religions and being thus the foremost of divine incarnations. Our subject this morning is Swami Subodhananda, a monastic disciple of Sri Ramakrishna. Actually, today is his birth anniversary, so we are devoting this time to discuss his life and teachings. Sri Ramakrishna, as most of you are familiar, was a great mystic saint of India and is regarded by millions the world over as a divine incarnation. His early life was devoted to the practice and testing of a variety of spiritual disciplines, not only of Hinduism but also of Christianity and Islam. After realizing God in each of those religions, he declared that all faith paths, if followed sincerely and earnestly, lead to the same God realization. Ramakrishna's life therefore embodies all spiritual ideals and represents the harmony of world's great religious traditions. Sri Ramakrishna is the spiritual force behind our order. Swami Vivekananda, his foremost disciple, brought his message to the West, and he also established the monastic order in the name of his guru, Sri Ramakrishna. Although Swami Vivekananda was the foremost bearer of Sri Ramakrishna's message and is probably most well known, Sri Ramakrishna had altogether 16 monastic disciples, and Swami Subodhananda, whose life we are discussing today, was one of them. Each of the disciples of the Master was a great spiritual personality, and each and all of them served as the conduits of the spiritual current that emanated from Sri Ramakrishna. These disciples were trained by the Master. They witnessed his daily life and actions. So through their holy lives, the spiritual ideas and ideals of Sri Ramakrishna manifested before the world. Swami Subodhananda, his pre-monastic name was Subodh Chandra Ghosh. He first came to the Master when he was only 17 years old. His family owned the Siddheshwari Kali Temple in Calcutta. It's quite a famous temple. Much earlier, when Sri Ramakrishna had first moved to Calcutta in 1852, he often visited this temple as he stayed nearby. Subodha's family was traditional devout Hindu. However, his father was also closely associated with Brahmo Samaj, a socio-religious organization and sort of a counter-Hinduism movement at the time. He would take his children to the services at Brahmo Samaj and buy religious books for them. And his mother would tell him stories from the Indian epics and mythologies. These stories created a religious inclination in the boy from his very childhood. He also later said that when he was young, he used to read the biographies of saints and holy people and observe how their lives were transformed. So this was the kind of atmosphere this boy grew up in. Interestingly, he came in contact with Sri Ramakrishna through his father. Sometime in 1885, his father told him about Sri Ramakrishna, and about his meeting with Keshav Chandra Sen. Then one day his father presented him a copy of a book, Sri Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa's Ukti, which is translated as Sayings of Sri Ramakrishna, a compilation of the master's teachings. When Subodh, this 17-year-old boy, read the book, he was deeply impressed by what the master says and was extremely eager to meet this saint. And when he told his father about his desire, his father promised to take him to Dakshineshwar temple where Sri Ramakrishna lived on a holiday. But Subodh was so moved by the teachings, he became too impatient to wait for a holiday. So one morning in August 1885, he and a friend set out for Dakshineshwar on foot. And these two boys did not even know exactly where Dakshineshwar was located, except that it was somewhere on the bank of the Ganges, north of Calcutta. So as they set off on foot, they lost their way, and then they became worried because they had not informed their parents at home. But they were somehow able to ask around, and someone pointed them to the right direction, and the two boys reached the Dakshineshwar temple. Subodh was very shy by temperament, and so he prodded his friend to go in the master's room first. So his friend approached the master. The master was seated on his bed, and Subodh stood at the door. Now I will read to you in details the first encounter of these two boys with Sri Ramakrishna. In this very encounter, we can see how this 17-year-old boy's character was. It's very revealing. I mean, he was, even at that age, so full of common sense. He is simple, frank, and yet extremely thoughtful. So it all comes through his conversation that he had with the master. So the master asks, "Where do you come from?" Pointing to Subodh, the master says, "Why is that gentleman standing so far away? Come nearer." This encouraged Subodh to move closer. "Do you not belong to the family of Shankar Ghosh?" the master asks. Subodh was surprised and said, "Yes, sir, but how did you know?" "When I lived in Calcutta, I often visited your home as well as your Kali temple at Tantania. That was before you were born. I knew you would come here one day. The Divine Mother sends here those who will attain spirituality. You belong to this place." Subodh said, "Sir, if I belong to this place, why did you not call me earlier?" The master replied, "My boy, everything happens at the right time." Then the master asked Subodh to sit on his own bed. "No, sir," said Subodh, "I can't sit on your bed. These are my school clothes. They are not fresh, and my feet are dusty." The master, however, made Subodh sit next to him on his bed, saying, "You are my very own. How does it matter whether your clothes are clean or not?" After a while, however, Subodh sat on the floor out of respect. The master then asked his nephew Ramlal to spread a carpet on the floor for the boys, and the conversation continued. The master asked, "How did you come to Dakshineshwar?" Now the master's loving care and affection by this time had removed Subodh's shyness and uneasiness. So now he promptly replied, "We have come here on foot." "My goodness, you have covered such a long distance on foot?" the master asked, surprised. "How did you find out about me?" Subodh replied, "I read your teachings and was very impressed. They are really remarkable. You are such a great man and so famous. That is why we have come to see you." As soon as he heard these words, there was a sudden change in the master's mood. With a humility that amazed the boys, he said, "Ah, I am lower than a worm. Name and fame ridiculous. Really, I am more insignificant than a worm. After a while, he said to Subodh, the Divine Mother sends here those who will receive her grace. Please come here on Tuesdays or Saturdays. Many people from your part of the town come here on those days. Come with them. Now Subodh said, no, sir, that will not do. My relatives will find out that I am coming here. They will not approve of it. Please tell me whatever you want to say now. I cannot take back my words, my child, said the master. If I say I shall go to a certain place on such and such a day, I must do so in spite of rain or thunderstorm. Even if I don't like it, mother drags me there. I have spoken these words, so you must come on Tuesdays or Saturdays. Subodh agreed, and realizing that it was getting late, he asked leave to go home. Have some refreshments, the master said. It is not necessary, sir. We shall eat at home, Subodh replied. No, have some sweets and water and then go, said the master. And he asked Latu, later Swabish Adbhutananda, to serve these boys. When they had finished their refreshments, the master again said, your home is quite a distance from here. You are too young to walk such a distance. Why don't you go by boat or share a carriage? I shall give you the fare. One little thing is, it turns out that Subodh didn't know how to swim, and so he was afraid of riding on a boat. So he said to the master, I don't know how to swim, so we can't go by boat. Then go by carriage. No, sir, we shall walk. Look, my child, your feet will be tired from walking such a distance. Sir, we are young. If we do not walk now, when shall we walk? Moreover, you are a holy man. Where will you get the money? Ramakrishna smiled and replied, some people give money for this place. You need not worry about that. Please take some money and go by carriage. Since Subodh was inexorable, the master said to Kshirodh, his friend, you take the money and go by carriage. But Subodh immediately interrupted his friend and said, don't accept the money, we shall go on foot. So he was absolutely, could not be convinced to take money from this holy man. So without insisting any further, the master said, come again on either Saturday or Tuesday. Both boys took the dust of master's feet and left for home that day. Subodh was one of the younger disciples of the master, and he did not live with Sri Ramakrishna all the time like some of the other disciples did. But he did visit the master often without the knowledge of his parents. And this way he observed the master's life minutely and learned many things of spiritual life. And he gave some very precious reminiscences of Sri Ramakrishna later. So I will read to you some of his reminiscences. He says, I have seen something wonderful in the master. His room would be packed with people, and they would have many questions in their minds, yet in a single comment, he would answer all of their unspoken questions. The master's feet were extremely tender and delicate. He could not wear regular shoes. We had to place cotton padding inside his shoes so he could wear them. In the earlier part of his life, the master wore his golden amulet, but later he could not touch anything metallic. The master told me about himself. This body is a cage of flesh and bones, but the Divine Mother is playing inside it. He who was Rama and he who was Krishna is living inside this body. In the field of religion, a lot of people talk about their spiritual experiences, and sometimes we do not know what is real and what is not real. But Sri Ramakrishna's disciples witnessed his life and learned what real spiritual experience is and what is not. Swami Subodhananda recalled, once a servant was carrying tobacco in a cup in the old-fashioned way with live charcoal on the top. The master was lying down on the floor in spiritual ecstasy. A piece of the charcoal accidentally fell on the master's back. It burnt through his skin and went deep into the flesh. After regaining outer consciousness, the master said to someone, "Please see what is there. Perhaps an ant is biting me." This is real samadhi, when one loses body consciousness completely, like someone who is dead drunk. After visiting the master, we understood what real ecstasy or samadhi is. So later, if anyone pretended to be in samadhi, I would simply prick him with a needle and that would break his samadhi. Sri Ramakrishna freely talked to the disciples about the struggles and experiences of his spiritual journey. The master once told Subodh, "I was then possessed by divine madness. One day I was weeding in the garden. I was unaware that a beautiful young woman was standing behind me. Piqued, she said to me, 'Hello, Sadhu, I have been standing behind you for a long time and you have not looked at me even. I have visited many ashramas and everywhere people are eager to talk to me and want me to live there, but you don't even care to glance at me. You are really a true sadhu.'" Another incident Swami Subodhananda later recalled. Kedarnath Chattopadhyaya was a devotee of the master. He worked as an officer in the Indian government and his supervisor was a British gentleman. One day, Kedar had talked to this British gentleman about the master and said, "Sri Ramakrishna is God himself." Now this British man became very anxious to meet the master, thinking, if Sri Ramakrishna is God, then he must belong to all. So one day he decided to visit the master and asked Kedar to accompany him. After arriving there, Kedar told his Christian supervisor, "You may not be allowed to enter the temple complex where the master's room is, so you please wait outside." Kedar went to the master's room, but he was not there. In the meantime, the Englishman was waiting nearby on the bank of the Ganges. At this time, the master was returning to his room from the pine grove. And they met on the garden path, the master and this British visitor, they met on the garden path. So the British man rushed to him and touched his feet. And he then exclaimed, "Here is my Jesus, here is my Jesus." And the master blessed him wholeheartedly, touching his head, and gave him some instructions. The Englishman understood what the master told him. He resigned his job, he renounced the world, and moved to Vrindavan. There he became a mendicant and lived on alms, and eventually died there. In the beginning, Subodh did not accept the master as a divine incarnation. And he was a very frank and simple person. He did not hide anything from the master. One day the master asked him, "What do you think of me?" Subodh replied, "People say many different things about you. I won't believe anything until I find clear proof." Ramakrishna was very pleased with Subodh's frankness and said, as he said to his other disciples also, "Very well. As a money changer checks a coin, likewise accept me only after testing." In a letter written many years later, Swami Subodhananda said of Sri Ramakrishna and Holy Mother, "If they don't want to reveal themselves, who can recognize them?" As he grew older and closer to the master, his conviction about Sri Ramakrishna's divinity gradually gained strength. One day toward the end of his life at Kashipur Garden House, Subodh went to see the master and found him alone in his room. The master advised him to practice meditation. At this, Subodh replied, "Sir, I cannot do so much spiritual disciplines, such as practicing pranayama by pressing the nostrils, doing japa meditation, sitting in a particular posture, and so on. Please bless me so that I can have God realization quickly and directly. If I have to practice meditation, why should I come to you? I may as well go to some other ordinary guru." Of course, the master understood the boy's inner feeling, his wholehearted faith in the master's divinity, and he was very pleased, and he said, smiling to the boy, "All right, you will not have to do all those things, but think of me twice a day in the morning and evening." Subodh said to the master, "I shall try. I shall try to think of you as the veritable manifestation of God. Please bless me so that I can have direct experience." The master tapped on his back and said, "Yes, yes, you will realize God. Afterwards, many people will learn by seeing you." And that actually really came to pass. After Sri Ramakrishna's passing, a tremendous dispassion came over this young boy. Initially, he left home and went to Varanasi on foot. Later, he joined his brother disciples at the Boranagar Monastery. There, they took the final monastic vows, and Swami Vivekananda gave him the name Swami Subodhananda. As he was very young, Sri Ramakrishna had affectionately called him Khoka, which means little boy. And so later, Swamiji and other brother disciples also called him Khoka, and he became known in the Ramakrishna order as Khoka Maharaj. When Swami Vivekananda much later organized the work of the Ramakrishna order, Subodhananda was among the first group of trustees. Later, he was elected the treasurer of the order and served in that role until his passing. Swami Subodhananda was a most simple, unostentatious monk. Another junior monk who had lived with him at the Belur Monastery recalled, "Khoka Maharaj was very easy of access. Everybody felt very easy with him. Being in his presence, people would altogether forget the wide gulf of difference between their spiritual life and his. At the same time, he also did not try to make special artificial attempt to hide his own spiritual height. In a natural, straightforward way, he mixed with one and all, with people of all ages and denominations, and made them his own. Many people, not particularly interested in religion, were drawn to him simply by his love and were imperceptibly benefited. He had great sympathy for the young monks who had just come to join the order. He took the time to find out their difficulties and help them with advice and guidance. If someone did something wrong inadvertently, Subodhananda would come forward and shield them and would intercede on their behalf with the elder monks. Often the young monks would be assigned some difficult jobs and they would not perhaps know how to do it. On such occasions, Subodhananda would come and assist them. As his external life was marked by simplicity, his inner spiritual life was marked by directness. He had no philosophical problems of his own to solve. The ultimate reality was a fact for him, a matter of direct experience to him. So whenever he would speak of God, one felt that here was a man to whom God was a greater reality than one's own relatives. The Swami once said, God can be realized much more tangibly than one feels the presence of a companion with whom one is walking. His own personal worship was wonderfully free from any pompous rituals. When he entered the temple shrine, his demeanor was as if he were going to a very near relation. His relationship with God was just as free and natural as a human relationship. Notwithstanding their great spiritual stature, these disciples of the Master were also very human. They were also very much full of fun, and they had fun at the expense of each other sometimes. There are some interesting, amusing incidents around Swami Subodhananda. One is that from his boyhood, he loved to drink tea. And sometimes as a little boy, he even thought that tea was a cure for everything. When Sri Ramakrishna was suffering from throat cancer and was in great pain, Subodh one day naively suggested, "Sir, please drink some tea. It will help alleviate your pain." The master, who was also as simple as a five-year-old child, said to his attendant, "See, this boy says that drinking tea might help, so I should drink tea." But then his another disciple, Swami Brahmananda, who was a little more matured, he intervened and said that no, tea is not likely to help. Rather, the hot liquid might irritate the throat. So then Sri Ramakrishna immediately said, "Then I should not have tea." And Subodhananda later on recalled this incident and said that he was really struck by the childlike simplicity of the master. One night at Belur Math, Swami Vivekananda was meditating in his room, and Swami Brahmananda and Subodhananda were sleeping in the next room. After his meditation, Swamiji woke Subodh up and asked him to prepare a smoking pipe for him. This was sometimes Swamiji's habit, to have a smoke after his long meditation. And Subodh immediately got up and prepared a smoke for him. Swamiji was very pleased with his loving service and said to Subodh, "Please ask for a blessing. Anything you ask would be granted." Now, even for this kind of small, insignificant things, it is remarkable to note how the minds of these great saints work. So when Swamiji said, "Ask anything," Subodh said, "The master has given us everything. What else can I ask?" But then Brahmananda said in a rather light-hearted way, "No, since Swamiji has offered to give you a boon, you should really ask for something, think of something." So then Swami Subodhananda thought for a moment and then said, "Okay, grant me this, that for the rest of my life, may I never miss my daily cup of tea." So this was a little bit funny actually, but later a monk actually asked Subodhananda that, "Was this boon really granted to you?" And Subodhananda said, "Yes, truly, even unexpectedly, somehow from somewhere, always a cup of tea came to me every day and I never really had to miss my cup of tea." Another time it so happened that Swami Vivekananda was encouraging all his young brother monks to spread the message of Vedanta and to practice speaking in public. And many of these monks were very reticent to speak in public, although they were, you know, of great spiritual heights. And Swami Subodhananda was one of these very shy people. But Swami Vivekananda would not yield, and so finally it was Swami Subodhananda's turn to give a talk. And so everybody gathered at the monastery and he was supposed to give a talk. And as he got up, there was a huge earthquake. And it was one of the most devastating earthquakes in that area. And if the building shook, the trees started to fall, and of course everything, the meeting was dissolved. And later Swamiji commented that, look, you gave an earth-shattering talk. Swami Subodhananda, as we just mentioned, was a very unassuming, humble monk. And giving unsolicited spiritual advice was very much against his nature. Even when someone asked for some advice, he was very reticent and very reluctant to say much. One senior monk said, when we would ask for advice, Koka Maharaj would say, oh, you have heard all that, what more can I say, what is there to say? But when we pressed very much, he would then say, think of me when you drink some fine tea. But on occasions, he did speak to spiritual seekers. And at those times, his words were full of deep spiritual wisdom. He was very much fond of talking about his master. In fact, that is all he talked about. His mind was totally absorbed in Sri Ramakrishna, and always he spoke about his master. And he taught people from his own experience. One day, he talked about the efficacy of prayer and japam. He said, pray to God sincerely, then you will see him. Sincere prayer means tell the Lord your pain and problems with tears in your eyes. Ask him for faith and devotion. All power belongs to God. If anyone repeats the mantra, the divine name, he will definitely get the result. For instance, when a farmer sows seeds in the ground, no matter whether the seeds are placed in the ground straight or upside down, they will sprout all the same. So once you have received the divine name, it will bear fruit one day. He is everything. It is he who gives pain, and again he who gives peace. One can overcome all obstacles by repeating the mantra. On another occasion, he gave a talk to an assembly of young men about spiritual life and harmony of religions. Quote, our master used to say that if we want to pass a thread through the eye of a needle, all the scattered fibers of the thread should be brought to a point. Then alone can we make it go through the needle. If the fibers are allowed to point in all various directions, they will prevent the thread from passing through the needle. Similarly, if we want to lift our minds up towards God, we must bring it back from all external things and concentrate it on one point. Our master said that just as rainwater does not remain on high ground, but always seeks the lowest level. Similarly, those who are puffed up with vanity cannot retain any faith in themselves, for faith always seeks the hearts of the humble and the meek. As long as there are quarrels among different individuals and sects, they cannot rise up to realize the highest truth. When truth shines, the darkness of ignorance and its crew of narrowness, bigotry, fanaticism that deludes the world with murder and bloodshed will all vanish. My God is the true God, your God is false. These are the words of those who grope in the darkness of ignorance. Once Keshav Chandra Sen, the Brahmo leader, asked our master, since there is only one God, there is only God, how is it that there are so many sects quarreling with one another? The master replied, you see, people always quarrel over their land, property, and other things of the world, saying, this land is mine and that is yours. In this way, they divide this earth in various ways by drawing lines of demarcation to distinguish their respective property. But no one ever quarreled about the open space that is above the earth, for that belonged to no one. Similarly, when the mind rises above all worldly concerns, one has no occasion to quarrel, for then one reaches a certain point that is the common goal of all. When a man realizes God, he cannot quarrel, but only when he is below the right mark, that is, when he is distant from God, he is more or less given to quarreling. However, although you may have many occasions for it, you can at last end all these disagreements by realizing universal harmony and agreement, which are only to be found in God, who is both within and without you. Although Swami Subodhananda was initially very reluctant to give much spiritual advice or instruction, in later years he actually blessed many people with spiritual initiation and became a guide to many spiritual seekers. Especially, he traveled extensively in East Bengal, present Bangladesh, and spread the Master's message. And many devotees thought of him as their spiritual guide. Many people would also write to him for spiritual instructions. And we are fortunate that there are some letters available, so we can see how he responded to people's questions. So I will read to you a few letters that he wrote to the devotees. Although we are not able to see the questions they asked, but we can easily understand the questions that were being asked. One letter written in 1916. Dear Mrs. A, you have expressed sorrow because I didn't write you a long letter last time. Please understand that the length of my letter doesn't matter. It is sincere love that counts, because that has no end. You have asked me about the evening worship rituals. Follow what Holy Mother has told you in this regard. But whatever rituals you do, you must do with sincere faith. Whatever is to be achieved will be achieved that way alone. Go on doing worship and japa as you have been doing. Don't make your mind restless unnecessarily. You have asked me to write to you a lot of things about the Master. Well, what new thing about him can I tell you? Read whatever books you have about him whenever you find time. If you can't understand certain things, ask someone to explain it to you. When a child wants something, the child asks his or her mother for it. If the mother cannot satisfy him, the child starts crying. In the end, the mother has to yield. Know the Master to be like your mother. He is your very own. Cry to him and demand that he reveal himself to you. We should love the Master as intensely as a miser loves his wealth. How much people weep for money and things of the world? Who weeps for God in the same way? Read books like the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna and Sri Ramakrishna and His Divine Play. You will learn many new things about the Master, and your time will also be well spent. Your well-wisher, Subodhananda. Another letter. Dear Mr. B, I was very glad to receive your letter. Divine Mother Durga will be worshipped in an image at Belur Math. That is why I shall stay here until Durga Puja. Why do people have no peace of mind, you have asked? How can one who indulges in bad thoughts and is busy day and night with useless things have peace? They have no goal in life and are always busy thinking about what this person or that person says or does. Know this for sure: to one who is good, the whole world is good, but a thief thinks everyone is a thief. Mahapurush Maharaj, as well as the rest of us, are very glad to hear that a school has been opened for poor boys in Narayan Ganj. God helps those who serve the poor. Along with their regular studies, it will be good if you could tell them something about religion and also let them know about the Master and Swamiji. Never back down when an opportunity to do good work presents itself. One who tries to do good work has to face a lot of obstacles. That is why you should stand on your own feet and not depend on anyone else. If you can find a companion who can truly help you, well and good. Otherwise, work alone. No good work can be expected from those whose minds are full of doubts. Accept my love and best wishes. All of you should always remember that you have taken refuge in Sri Ramakrishna. Your well-wisher, Subodhananda. Another letter, 1928, written from Belur Mott. Dear B, I received your letter and got all the news. I am very sorry to learn that your mind becomes restless from time to time. Tell N about all your needs. You need not worry about whether people praise or blame you. Just keep on doing your spiritual practices and try to serve God in fellow human beings. Know that the dumb have no enemies. Go on doing your work silently. What is the need of thinking about what this person or that person is saying? Have you become a monk to be always busy thinking about what this person or that person thinks about you? There is no need to engage in useless conversation. Stay within yourself and remain silent. That will bring you peace. Being guided by what others are saying will only result in restlessness. Accept my heartfelt love and best wishes and convey the same to all others there. Your well-wisher, Subodhananda. Okay, another letter he writes to a devotee, dear S. Swami Vivekananda used to say, Mother, keep me in a place where everybody criticizes me. Let anyone I approach drive me away. That way my mind will be given to you alone. I don't want the love of humans or their praise. End of quote. How is your work going on? Just think, after 500 years or so, where will we be and where will all our work be? Reflect on this and then try to give your mind to God and God alone. Whatever we see around us is Maya and makes us forget God. Accept my heartfelt love and best wishes and convey the same to all others there. Your well-wisher, Subodhananda. And then one more, the last letter I'm going to read today. It's written in 1930 from Belur Mott. Dear S, I was very sorry to learn of so-and-so's death from your letter. May the Master grant him peace. Birth, death, old age, sickness, happiness, and misery, all these are part and parcel of this world. If a person entrusts you to take care of something that belongs to him, you shouldn't be grieved when he takes it back. The Master has simply taken back what he had left in your care. The Master left him in your care for some days, and you took care of him to the best of your ability. You have taken shelter at the Master's feet. He is your friend in happiness as well as in sorrow. Your observation that the master lets us realize the transient nature of this world through such incidents is very true. Everybody remembers God only in times of sorrow. When they are happy, they don't remember him even by mistake. But if they can remember him in times of happiness, they will never be sorrowful. In whatever condition God keeps you, don't forget him. If you can do this, then even hundreds of misfortunes won't be able to disturb you. Through such incidents, the master sometimes tests his devotees. May he grant you peace out of his mercy. All of you, please accept our heartfelt love and best wishes. Please don't forget to let me know how you all are doing. Your well-wisher, Subodhananda. A few months after this, Swami Subodhananda was diagnosed with terminal tuberculosis. In spite of all medical help, his health began to deteriorate. When he was very sick, he could no longer read the scriptures, and other monks would read to him from the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, the Bhagavatam, and the Upanishads. No matter how much his body suffered, the Swami did not forget his master's instruction, "Think of me twice a day." So even when he could not change his position in bed even without some help, in the morning and before going to bed at night, he would lift his head with much effort, look at the master's picture and salute him with folded hands till his very last day. Subodhananda demonstrated how to face the inevitable death, remembering God till his very last breath. He passed away in December 1932. I'll stop here. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. That is perfect, this is perfect, and from the perfect is derived. The perfect having been subtracted from the perfect verily remains. Om, peace, peace, peace.